hope you'll forgive me. I'm sort of new at this. I'm Tom Pittman. I run Itty Bitty Computer Company, which is not Itty Bitty Machines in Illinois. There seems to be some confusion over the name. I've been selling Tiny Basic for about a year, and as a result have made some observations on high-level languages. This is more or less a tutorial on high-level languages. If you went to the banquet last night and heard Ted Nelson, I'm going to say some of the same things he did, and then I'm going to say some different things. The invention of the steam engine in the 18th century by James Watt ushered in the Industrial Revolution in that it allowed machines to assist and replace the physical efforts of human beings. The invention of the computer in our era promises to do the same thing all over, because it allows machines to assist and replace the mental efforts of human beings. The machines of the Industrial Revolution were controlled by the physical manipulation of mechanical linkages. The machines of our time are to be controlled, if you will, by the mental manipulation of verbal linkages. Or at least so if the analogy holds. Actually, we're only beginning to scratch the surface of these verbal linkages. This paper deals with one small aspect of man-machine communications. And I'm really talking about computer languages as a way to get processors to do what you want them to do. Computer is a logic machine, not an information processor. Information in general and logical propositions in particular are communicated and manipulated by what we call language. This fact is a major contribution of Ludwig Wittgenstein to modern philosophy. A language is defined by the form of its statements and the meaning of its vocabulary. An English statement, let's see, we got some, right. The English statement, "We were playing games, makes sense to us because its form is correct. That is, it's a subject followed by a compound verb followed by an object. And the words are meaningful. If the word order is different, say, were we playing games, then we have a sentence with a completely different significance. Or yet a different ordering. We playing games were, it doesn't make sense, because the word order is not correct for English grammar. Similarly, a sentence that says, "We weren't playing games also doesn't make sense, because one of the words has no meaning in English. The word may be a perfectly valid word, say, in German. Okay, computer languages are similarly defined by their form and the meaning of the words. This is a perfectly good sentence, if you will, to a 6800 computer. But it makes no sense at all to an 8080 or a 6502. Change the word order. It also makes no sense to the 6800. Notice that neither of these sentences makes any sense to you. Similarly, none of the English sentences that we looked at makes any sense to the computer. This brings us to the subject of languages suitable for man-machine communications. Okay, to be useful, a language must be understood, in some sense of the word, by both the originator and the receiver. For the moment, let's concentrate on the single link from the human to the computer. Pardon my stylized symbology here. This is actually the difficult path. The subject matter, I guess, to get information from the computer to people turns out to be a lot easier. The subject matter to be communicated is usually a set of commands directing the computer to perform some task. The language in which these commands are communicated is called a programming language. And the set of language is called a program. The machine's natural language is binary, and for reasons that quickly become obvious to anyone trying to use it, binary is not a practical programming language. I think the first Altairs came out where binary was the language you programmed it in. And many people wore out their fingers. Although we hear frequent claims to the contrary, English is also not a practical programming language. It's much too ambiguous. Okay, so we're left with the necessity of inventing a new language. When two people of differing natural languages wish to communicate with each other, some translation is necessary. One of the two is obliged to learn the other person's language, or possibly they both learn a third language, such as Swahili or Pidgin. Now, seriously, these are used as trade languages in their respective parts of the world. They're not natural languages. They were invented as a way to get people of differing natural languages to communicate with each other. Another possibility is that they hire another person fluent in both languages as an interpreter or translator. Magic words. Each of these three alternatives has its counterpart in the human-computer interface. There are those few hardy souls who program in binary absolute, toggling their programs in via switches and reading their answers on the front panel lights. On the other hand, current artificial intelligence research has computer programs understanding a limited amount of English, a natural English. But a large number of people earn their living translating and interpreting communications between people and computers. I happen to be one of those people. And we have a growing number of new languages designed to be understandable to both people and computer. This is the machine serving the same function. So let's again narrow our scope and examine these new languages. I'm gonna move to the next foil. The first and most obvious new language preserves the form of and syntax of machine language and translates, or rather transliterates, only the vocabulary into the Roman alphabet. We call this an assembly language. Every assembly language statement corresponds exactly to one machine language instruction. Actually, there's some important exceptions to this, but we won't talk about them now. A person writing in assembly language must know almost enough about the machine language to write in it directly. The computer needs only a relatively small number of instructions to properly understand a program written in assembly language. This puts the assembly language way over close to the machine language in this kind of a continuum between the two. The human writing in assembly language needs a great deal of skill and training. I suppose that's what we find out when we get the computer and we discover that that we do need to learn how to program it. Even so, even with all the skill and training, we find that the message is often improperly communicated. We say of this situation that the program has bugs. In most cases, the originator of the message still needs to hire another person to translate from the human version of the message to the assembly language. And we call these translators programmers. Now, most of you people here are here because you are learning how to be the programmer, because you don't want to hire somebody. Programmers turn out to be a cantankerous breed. These are the hired type. Somewhat like the scouts of the Wild West days. They tend to be social misfits, a necessary link between civilized society and the unknown. Often less sympathetic to us than the other side, be it wild Indians or mad computers. My apologies to the AIM and or IBM. These programmers, or scouts, are few in number compared to the rest of the population, and very expensive. Therefore, we hope for a language more like our own, so we can avoid that expense. We call these languages high-level languages, which are sometimes abbreviated HLL in printed documents. As it turns out, high-level languages have not rescued us from the clutches of that villainous breed of programmers at all, but only enabled us, or them, to communicate bigger and ever more complicated messages or programs to the machines. So now let's focus on this aspect of programming. Generally accepted in the computer industry that a typical programmer will produce an average of one line of debugged and documented code, roughly equivalent to one sentence with footnotes, per hour. This figure seems rather low to us hobbyists, but then we probably do not document our own code as extensively as they do, nor for that matter do we test it as fully. The important thing to notice here is that the speed figure is relatively constant and independent of the language being used. Couple this with the fact that a program written in assembly language is some 3 to 30 times longer, that is more statements or lines, than an equivalent one written in a high-level language, and we have a piece of data that translates directly into dollars in a commercial environment. Okay, there's some other reasons for favoring high-level languages. We mentioned that a high-level language, high-level languages are more like our own language, more on this end of the continuum. And less like that of the computer. The more of the burden of translating that we can put on the machine, the less of a burden it is to us. Furthermore, the language that we speak or write affects our thought processes. Some high-level languages can help us to think in ways that develop into good thinking habits, and some don't encourage this. This is the problem with structured programming. I'm going to get into that. Finally, by being more distant from the object machine language, a program written in a high-level language has a greater chance of running on a different computer. Just as a message in Pidgin may be understood by any of several South Pacific tribes, whose own natural languages may be as different as Spanish and Hebrew. We will discuss this particular aspect a little bit more. But with so many advantages, what can be said against high-level languages? Well, for one thing, not all computers accept them. Like, for example, the first Altairs with no high-level language at all. Those that do require big, expensive, cumbersome, and inefficient compilers to translate them to machine language or something. The translated program is almost never as good as the one translated by a human programmer, and usually 30 to 100% bigger. That's more machine language instructions and slower in machine time to perform the program task. Actually, I have done an experiment, it wasn't an experiment, it was a case history in the comparison of how a high-level language would relate to machine language in handling a particular task. And we'll move the next slide here. I had the requirement for doing an assembler for my tiny BASIC. I needed an assembler for a language that did not exist, and I had essentially four choices to implement what I wanted to do in the machine language. The first choice is, of course, to forget the assembler and write in binary absolute. This represents maybe 2 or 3 weeks of continuous thinking effort in writing and rewriting and rechanging the instructions and whatnot to get my program out. Second choice was write an assembler in machine language and then write my program in the assembly language and assemble it. This figured 2 or 3 weeks of writing the assembler and then a couple days to run it over the new program. Third choice was modify an existing assembler I had to accept the machine language, and that represents a week and a half or so of modification and effort, and then, like I said, a few days to run it. Now, the actual development on the tool here is represented by the dashes, the runtime by the dots, where this is, runtime represents time I have to spend working with the computer. The fourth alternative was to write the assembler in a high-level language, in this case, Tiny BASIC. It took me 2 days to write and debug the assembler. It executes excruciatingly slow, and And it took almost a week to get my program run through it and reassembled the number of times it needed reassembly. The result was that the other three alternatives all represented at least 2 weeks and maybe 3 weeks of elapsed time, that's calendar time, compared to a little over 1 week with the tiny basic assembler approach. The amount of think time involved, in other words, the amount of attention I had to give this, was on the order of 4 days for the last one, whereas it was almost continuous for the others. Now, this because I can put the assembler on in the evening and come back the next day. And during that time, I can sleep, eat, go to the movie, whatever I want to do while the assembler is chunking off very slowly. Now, it looks ridiculous, but in all, I save both calendar time and my own personal attention, my think time, by doing it in a high-level language. Now, Tiny Basic is not really suitable for writing assemblers, but still, it beats all the other alternatives. This assembler, incidentally, I do have it available in our booth at 410, booth 410 downstairs for you to look at. It's part of a package that we're selling now. We call it the Tiny Basic Experimenter's Kit. I just wanted to show you that this is, actually, I was surprised that I got this much of an improvement out of it. Okay, a high-level language can be processed in one of two ways. We have a high-level language interpreter, and we have a compiler. We'll move to the next. There seems to be a lot of confusion about the difference between a compiler and an interpreter. An interpreter is a program, it's a set of instructions telling the machine what to do, which accepts the high-level language program as input, accepts the data as input, and produces answers directly. A compiler, and this is on the next, a compiler is a program which accepts your high-level language's input and spits out a machine language program, and which you then have to run as a second step. It accepts your data as input and produces your answers as output. Now, BASIC is generally done as an interpreter, and this gives you extremely fast turnaround, ease of debugging, which the previous speaker mentioned. A compiler produces a much more efficient execution speed, although it's not as convenient to debug your program. Again, this is the previous speaker mentioned on comparing his Fortran and BASIC. Okay, we call an interpreter because the computer accepts and interprets each statement in the high-level language at the time the action commanded by that statement is to be performed. The lengthy compilation process is eliminated, and now the program, but the program can only run as fast as the interpreter is able to understand each new statement. If an operation is to be repeated, each statement must be interpreted afresh each time. For programs which are not used very often, or which are frequently changed, or for which the execution time is less important than other considerations, this is often the best way to go. Where the same calculations are to be repeated thousands or millions of times, a compiled program is probably better. Okay, what are we looking for in a high-level language? A small business will be repeatedly coming up with requirements of the form, here is the input data on this file, these are the manipulations to be done, and this is what the output should look like. Ideally, the businessman would like to tell that to his programmer, who would then retreat into his hole and come out after a while with a program that does the job. And to some extent, this is what happens in large establishments. But the programmer is expensive, so we would like instead to give that same information directly to the computer and have it crank out a program to do the job. Let's see, the next foil is an example of the way we'd like to give it the information. The source information on this file and these particular column positions, the destination to appear on the report in that position, and some kind of indication of what the numbers mean, or whether they are numbers. Like maybe we have a number and we have a name, and maybe a decimal amount. Wishful thinking? Not really. This is exactly the concept in an RPG compiler. You fill out a special form indicating the type of the input data, where the values are, what parts to ignore, as in a database with an entire inventory, but you're only looking for the items below their restocking levels. What kinds of computations need to be done, if any? Much of the programming requirements are just summary reports. And how to format the output with dollar signs, decimal points, commas, identifying labels, column headings, page numbers, and all that. The less we actually need to specify, the better. So we check a box that says, this is a dollar amount, make it look pretty. If this can be done on a 4K byte mini computer 9 years ago, why can't we do it on a 16K byte micro now? Now there are some business applications for which RPG is awkward. One that comes to mind is filled with instructions of the form, subtract line 19 from line 18 and enter the difference, but not less than zero. I think you were familiar with that a couple days ago. We like to tell the computer something like, subtract line 19 from line 18, giving line 20. If line 20 is less than zero, move zero to line 20. The language is COBOL. COBOL on a small system? Why not? If it does the job. If your problem is subtract line 19 from line 18, giving line 20, we'd like to write the program in a language that we're working with. Everyone talks about business applications, but most of us come in contact with personal computers in recreational circumstances. We play games like Star Trek, Hammurabi, Lunar Lander. Perhaps we need a language designed for writing games. Today, almost all games are written in BASIC because it is available. Would the availability of a better language change that, or are we stuck with BASIC in the way the larger computer systems are stuck with Fortran? What is a good in a computer language? One of the most hotly contested issues is that called structured programming, which is a special buzzword meaning languages without go-to statements. Structured programming languages are a lot like organic food. Chemically, all food is organic. All programs have structure. But when we say organic foods, we usually mean only those grown without artificial treatments in the form of chemical fertilizers or pesticides. When we say structured programs, we usually mean only those written without go-to constructs in the language. The proponents of organic food attribute to it the power of life, health, and strength. The proponents of structured programming attribute to it the power of correctness, readability, and efficiency. The opponents in both cases discount any association of these virtues with the alleged cause and readily point out to spry old people who eat junk food or magnificent programs written with go-tos. I do not really intend to take sides with either issue, and it is important to realize that that just as the kind of food we eat does affect our health, so the languages we use do affect the quality of our programs. It's something you have to realize that it's a problem and we need to consider it in the choice of our languages. Another important consideration in the selection of language is the matter of efficiency. Aside from the question of programmer efficiency, we must also look at the development cycle of a program and its runtime throughput. Most of us with personal computers can expect to spend a much larger part of our time writing and debugging new programs or modifying existing programs to do something different. Rather than in running old programs unchanged. Thus, we would favor optimizing the development cycle over the runtime environment, and we should select languages which are interpreted rather than compiled. On the other hand, people with business or control applications may find that most of their processor time is spent in running the finished programs, and their interests are best served by a compiler. I think the best situation is a combination of these two, pioneered at Lawrence Livermore Labs. They have an interpreter for the initial writing and testing because it makes changes easy and quick, and then a compiler to reduce the debugged program to fast executing machine code. The interpreter can include such esoteric error checking diagnostic features as bounds checking, trace mode, and so on. And the compiler then can assume the program is already correct and concentrate on code optimization. I think we'll actually be seeing more of this in microprocessor languages. So let's look at some of the high-level languages available for personal-sized computers today. Notice some of these are compilers and some are interpreters, and some combine the two in some esoteric way. Some require large amounts of memory to enable the computer to accept a reasonable program, and some are very frugal. Some require mass storage, such as a floppy disk. Some do not. Some cost hundreds of dollars. Some are very inexpensive. And some are in the public domain. That's free. You may notice that many of the high-level languages are variations of BASIC. So I'm going to mention a few of these languages and say one or two things about them. You go downstairs and look at what people have to offer, you'll find a lot more than what I have to say. But I want to mention some significant ones. The Altair BASIC, of course, was the first high-level language available in the microprocessors, which was significant. It's often been considered one of the better BASIC interpreters. But they want $200 was the price I saw on a recent advertisement. I think the price is excessive for the normal hobbyist, resulting, as they found out, in wide-scale distribution of illicit copies. There are three sizes of the 8080 interpreter, occupying 4K, 8K, 12K bytes with room for small program. There are various versions which support paper tape, cassette, floppy, disk as peripherals. Processor technology has a basic, I think they call it BASIC 5, which they sell for $20. Recognizing the problem with Altair BASIC, Processor Technology chose to make the software more accessible. They call it free if you buy their hardware. The interpreter fills 5K bytes, more is required for program space. Lawrence Livermore BASIC is developed with government funds and therefore is in the public domain. Source listings are published in several periodicals. It's not as powerful as some of the other BASICs. The interpreter fills 6K bytes and program space extra. In other words, you can get a reasonable program in 8K. Southwest Tech has a BASIC for the 6800. They want $20, and they claim that you can copy it. They don't care, but it is copyrighted. Okay, Skelby, is that how you pronounce their name? I've only seen it written. Has what they call Skelbal for the 8008-8080. It's a book containing not only the complete listings of a basic interpreter, but also commentary to explain how and why it works. I couldn't let you out without mentioning Tiny Basic, which is available for the 6800 and 6502, and as of tomorrow, the 1802 from me. 8080 has several public domain copies. This is probably the smallest viable language for microprocessors, with the interpreter requiring just over 2K bytes. Source listings for 8080 Tiny BASIC and 6800 Micro BASIC, which is a variant of Tiny, have been published. Nibble is another variant of Tiny BASIC, which works on SCAM. Also has been published by National. I should mention our high-level languages, the compilers. We have PLM, which was only recently announced by Intel. Requires 65,000 bytes of memory and a dual floppy, and costs something like $1,000. It is the only resident compiler for a microprocessor high-level language that was available when I first wrote this thing. Of course, Fortran's not available now. 8080 Fortran, you've already heard about, is, there's actually two of these. I think Microsoft has one, has an 8080 Fortran too. I don't know much about that one. Motorola has announced a 6800 Fortran. Notice all of these are in the $500 to $1,000 range. I think that puts them out of the market of hobbyists. I couldn't let you by without talking a little bit about Pascal. Somebody has made available a sequential Pascal, which is a variant of True Pascal. But unfortunately, it's also very large. It requires 32,000 bytes and a dual floppy, running on the MDS, I think, right now. It compiles not down to machine language, but to down to a virtual machine, which is interpreted. So then you have a compiler producing a language which is interpreted. This is the combination of a compiler and interpreter. I think Fortran compiler, which was announced last year, took the same approach. It compiled down to a virtual machine, which was then interpreted. My list is by no means complete. It's intended to show the more significant language processors for each of the systems in widespread use as personal computers. There are several other language processors coming out now for existing and new personal computers. Nearly every new entry in the personal computer market includes some form of BASIC. I don't think you should get out of here without seeing the pet computer downstairs with the BASIC built in. They've got a very good price. $500. The computer is free. There's likely to be more Fortran compilers out before the end of the year. I like to think that I'm going to have one out. And in a price suitable for the hobbyist, in other words, less than $100. There's a lot of activity in Pascal. Which I think is probably a better language than either BASIC or Fortran. To say something a little bit about Pascal, I should mention some of the things you can do. In Fortran, you can say I is equal to 3. In Pascal, you can... And then in Fortran, you remember that 3 represents the color red, or something like that if you're dealing with colors. In Pascal, you can declare a type and call it color. And then you can assign variables of type color, and you can assign them a value red. Make your for loops to scan the color range of your type and perform some operation such as paint or whatever your program is doing. In other words, your program can actually tell you what you're doing. And this is the language that the Pascal will speak. This is, I took this right out of the Pascal manual. But what I wanted to say is the increasing use of personal computers, in both in the personal area and small businesses, is inevitably going to lead to some good languages, which will enable us to do the kinds of things we want to do without having to fool around with thinking in numbers when we mean objects like colors or things like that. We should see some good business languages which will give us business applications in the way that they work. And hopefully something that's a little bit more meaningful than BASIC. That's the substance of what I had to say. I will entertain questions. Let's see over here. My planned Fortran compiler compared with Fort 80. Fort 80 has some differences from the ANSI standard. I intend to support the ANSI standard exactly. Question over here.
How
The Lawrence Livermore BASIC that I looked at does not have very good string handling, if at all. I didn't really spend an awful lot of time looking at it. The person who developed it said he was trying to get something for chemists to use, which they were interested in floating point arithmetic and that kind of applications. And so he didn't put the effort into the other nice things like strings and matrices that the pretty basics have. Question over here. Well, I tried writing a compiler for Tiny BASIC as a serious approach to that problem. The problem was that the compiler was written in Tiny BASIC, and like I said, Tiny BASIC is not a language processing language and is excruciatingly slow. I think it's a good idea, because interpreters are a good way to debug a program, and a compiler is something that you can go off and so it takes a while to do. My biggest problem? Execution speed and memory size. Compilers are bigger. Because you want to do the optimization, and optimization takes space. Question over here. That I don't know. As far as I know, the compiler is not really released yet. Let me see, one in the back there. Yes? Well, ALGOL is another language in some ways more powerful than Fortran or BASIC. It's unfortunately a rather cumbersome language to compile, because it is so general. This is, again, why I like Pascal, because Pascal has many of the nice things in ALGOL without being so big that it's impossible to fit in a microprocessor. Another one back there. I would not call Pascal extensible. You have the ability to define types, but that's really only an extension from the concept of defining variables like arrays. You can define an array to be 30 by 40. Pascal also lets you tell you what the names of the values of the arrays are, if you will. Yes?
Is there any interest or any drive for producing compilers with, let's say, on a PP11, we have compiled for any one of a number of different microprocessors, where something like that would be very useful in an educational environment, where you might have a mini with a lot of peripherals that you want to run small programs in micro with a different instrument?
The trend has been away from cross-compilers. As a matter of fact, the first languages out for microprocessors were strictly cross products. You assemble on a larger computer and you produce code for the micro. This is what the manufacturers wanted to support. This is not what the users wanted. The users wanted their power local on the micro. They'll buy the memory, they'll buy the peripherals to run the micro. And manufacturers had to have this beaten over their head. Yes? What about I missed the beginning of your question. I think that the programmer should not have to be aware of the implementation of the language. If a stack is a good way to implement a recursive language like ALGOL or Pascal, that's good, but the programmer shouldn't have to worry about it. Those are the kinds of things that compilers do very nicely.